What it means to partially shut down the federal government in the middle of a flu epidemic, plus 10 years ago today, the Fed went on red alert over the gathering financial crisis. I'm David Brancaccio in New York with a new vote possible midday about reopening the federal government. Our coverage begins with 63% of the Centers for Disease Control who've been told not to come into work. 8,500 disease experts deemed non-essential during the shutdown. Marketplace's Dan Gorenstein is live at our health desk at WHYY. Dan, does this matter given the flu epidemic?
So on Friday, a senior Trump official said, quote, CDC will continue their ongoing influenza surveillance, collecting data reported by states and hospitals, and reporting critical information needed for state and local health authorities. I was speaking to Dr. Ali Khan this morning, David. He spent 20 years at CDC. He's gone through previous government shutdowns, and he said it was just a skeleton crew of people who must do their jobs and the work of people who aren't there. I asked him what type of thing might not happen today.
Who's monitoring all of these systems that we have to look at diseases coming in if two-thirds of the people aren't at work today? Who's doing the laboratory studies? Who's doing the critical public health research that's necessary for this disease?
Now, Dan, all of this is happening while we're seeing one rough flu season.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, a recent CDC report from earlier this month shows that more people got care for flu-like problems than any comparable period in about a decade. Nearly 9,000 people have been hospitalized. Again, from the CDC, hospitalizations and ER room use is up. Given this year's flu season, David, many people are going to be watching how this government shutdown impacts these operations, and the pressure is on.
Marketplace's Dan Gorenstein live there. Thank you. Public station WAMU in Washington's reporting on parents in Greater Washington scrambling for daycare since a number of the child care facilities are located in federal buildings that are now closed. Marketplace's Kimberly Adams last night spoke to a D.C. cab driver who said he expects to lose about two-thirds of his business based on his experience during the last government shutdown in 2013. It's not that the government workers take so many cabs. It's that non-government people who normally come in to hold meetings stay away. We're also following the shutdown and the IRS. If you missed that on the air today, consult the Marketplace Morning Report podcast feed. Checking the live market screens here, stock movements are subdued so far on this first workday of the shutdown. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are down modestly, 0.1% for the S&P future, down 0.2% for the Dow future. There's some movement into bonds, with the 10-year yield down a sliver at 2.65%. I want to take you back 10 years ago to January 2008. The Giants and, yes, the Patriots were headed to the Super Bowl. After a dramatic surge downward on world stock markets, the Federal Reserve unexpectedly cut interest rates in America. It was one of the early tactics to combat what exploded into a wildfire which would consume the economy, markets, households, and our politics for years to come. This year, the Marketplace team is exploring how the financial crisis and its aftermath changed us in a project called Divided Decade. Today, did policymakers do enough early enough? Andrew Metrick is a professor of finance and management at the Yale School of Management and director of the Yale Program on Financial Stability. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning.
So let's start with, it was January 22nd, 2008. How weird was it for the Fed to, in between meetings, when we're expecting them to nuance interest rate policy, in between meetings, suddenly come out with an announcement like this?
It's certainly surprising when the Fed does something in between meetings. Ever since August of 2007, the Federal Reserve had been very, very carefully following markets, both domestic and international, for the large disruptions that had occurred as a result of the subprime crisis.
You just wish the Fed was doing some of this earlier in the cycle, don't you?
You know, with the benefit of hindsight, I think the one thing that maybe everyone could agree we wish we did earlier was put in a couple of special programs that came 2 months later that were both designed to try to help the Bear Stearns and Lehman Brothers of the world deal with a liquidity crisis. Probably would have been helpful to have it a little earlier, but it's kind of an extreme thing and not the type of thing that you usually can do outside of an emergency. It, in fact, required that they use their emergency authority to do it.
So back to January 22nd, 2008, the Fed cuts interest rates, the biggest one-day drop in 24 years, even though the great financial mess was to come later that year. At least the stock market didn't crash in early 2008. So I guess there's that.
That's certainly not a bad thing if the stock market doesn't crash. But at this particular time, I think at the Federal Reserve, if you could have eavesdropped in on the meetings, and this is a guess because certainly I have never been able to do that, you would have heard them talking much more about disruption in credit markets rather than in equity markets. That was the concern at that time.
And so along with everything else, cutting rates on that particular day sent a message to people particularly worried about those credit markets that our stance is going to be to ease because we realize there's a problem out there.
Yes, I think that was the single most important thing that that action did and that most of the actions did over the time between August 2007 and September 2008. But the Fed's tools for this type of crisis, I think, as we learned, were limited. They did what they could, but had limited discretion over the types of problems that eventually bubbled through the market and became apparent in September of that year.
Andrew Metrick is a professor of finance and management at the Yale School of Management and director of the Yale Program on Financial Stability. Professor, thank you for this.
You're welcome.
Later today, we do talk to a guy who was inside the Fed fighting the mess 10 years ago. Now, all year, Marketplace is exploring how the financial crisis and its aftermath changed America in a project called Divided Decade. And we want to know how the financial crisis changed you. Tell us on Instagram with the hashtag #HowWeChanged. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. We're from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.